Okay, we're going to begin here on the bottom of Kuftev Zayin Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom. Amar Rav Ashi, Tarte Plige. Here we're discussing the machloket between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Shmuel Beno, Shor Rabbi Yochanan Ben Broka. Chumim say that when it came to Erev Pesach that fell out on Shabbat, that you're allowed to not only shecht the Korban Pesach, but you're allowed to do hefsheit, you're allowed to completely flay the animal and remove the skins entirely. Rabbi Shmuel Beno, Shor Rabbi Yochanan Ben Broka says, yes, you can shecht the animal. Yes, you can flay it, but you can only flay it until the chazeh, until the chest area, because that clears the area where you need to get access to, which is for the chalavim, for the fats. Now, the Gemara brought our Mishnah as a linchpin in their discussion about a proof to why the Rabbanan disagree with Rabbi Ishmael, but Rabbi Yochanan, but Broka. So the Gemara first brought our Mishnah as a proof, and the Gemara said, that doesn't work, because our Mishnah is talking about tiltul. So we're talking about an issue midrabanan. Over here, by Korban HaPesach, we're talking about an issue deoraita of hefshet, of flaying. So Rashi came in and says, betarte plige. They're actually arguing on two issues. Plige betiltu, or plige bemelacha. They argue on both the melacha aspect of it, which is the hefshet. How far can you flay the animal? Can you flay the animal all the way, or can you flay the animal only until the chest? In addition to that, they also argue about the issue of tiltu, the ability to carry this animal or this skin after you've flayed the skin. What's the status of this skin? Is this skin have a din of mukse? Or is this skin allowed to be carried? That, the Gemara says, that's what the Rabbanon say to Rabbi Shmuel, Benosha, Rabbi Yochanan, Ben Broka. Imatzilim tika sefer ima sefer. If you're allowed to save the encasement of the sefer along with the sefer itself, lo niteltel or agav basar. Certainly we should be able to carry the or because of the basar. As Rashi points out, v'dhavi nami kvod shemaim, it's also kvod shemaim, basar dumya de sefer. Flesh is equal to the sefer over here. Umutar de teltelo mi chamad etzel. And you can move the flesh from the sun or the heat into the shade. V'agav basar yiteltelo or amchubar bo. And because of the ability to move the basar, you'll also be able to move the or, which is the equivalent of the encasement of the Sefer Torah. Just like you can move the Sefer Torah and the cover with it. So over here, you'll be able to move the flesh along with the skin that's around it. It says, Midomi, how can you compare these two cases? Hotom nase bosis ledavar amutor, hocha nase basis ledavar harasur. That doesn't work. By the tika sefer, it becomes a basis ledavar amutar letaltelo. Because even if you didn't have any fire there, you could have carried the sefer, and therefore you're allowed to carry also along with it the cover. Hacha nase basis ledavar asur. Over here, the flesh is carrying something that is otherwise asur. Because as Rashi points out, hay or nase basis ledavar shukulo asur v'tiltul. That is not ra'ui to be eaten until nightfall. So the basar now becomes something that is not miteltel, something that is muksa. If that's muksa, and you want to now carry in addition to that the encasement, the skin along with it, then that's not going to work so well. As Rashi pointed out before, he said that you could carry the basar, and it wasn't muksa because it was kavod shemayim. Rashi over here says, Rabbi Shmuel, late kavod shemayim b'machal nechal hejot. It's not considered kavod shemayim to move the korban, the flesh of the korban, because who's going to consume the flesh of the korban is the hejot. It's a regular lay person. It's not shayach le shemayim. Therefore, he does not consider it to be kvod shemayim to move the basar. And he says, vafilavi or torat kli alav, mitzar mishum davi basis le isur. So even if you want to suggest that you can carry the whole thing, the skins included, because the skins would be a encapsulation, something to carry the basar with, you have a problem, because the basar itself is a sur. So now you've been carrying something which is called a basis, the Devar Asur, a base for something that is Asur. This happens on Shabbat all the time. It's a problem in Shabbat with regards to Muksa. If you put something underneath an item that is Muksa, it becomes what's called a Basis, the Devar Asur. It becomes a base to support something that's Asur, and it takes on the properties of Muksa, and it cannot be moved on Shabbat. It happens, for instance, when you light candles. You light candles on a tray, when you light candles on the table. The tray or the table become a Basis, the Devar Asur. They become a base for something that is Asur, and then they take on the properties of Muksa at that point in time. So that's what Rabbi Shmuel says over here. When it comes to the basar, it's muksa. The or, you want to carry the or because of the basar, you can't do that. The or now became a basis ledavar asur. Opposed to in our Mishnah, we have a Sefer Torah which is completely mutar. Now you have the cover around the Sefer Torah. So you're going to use the cover to carry the Sefer Torah. That's a basis ledavar ha mutar. There's no muksa problem over there. Comparing apples and oranges. So now, Tosafot does point out earlier that Rashi suggested that when we were talking about carrying the basar because of the or, Rashi says, well, the basar is asur. So Gemara wanted to suggest that, oh, because the basar is asur, and belay to carry the cover, to carry the sefer Torah, so you should belay to carry the or for the basar. Rashi said, the way Rashi set it up was that the basar is muksa, and then we're going to allow you to carry the or to carry the basar. Tosafot said, I don't understand that at all. If the basar is asur, then what's the point? How would you ever be matir? What was the hava meaning to think that you could carry the or because of the basar? Tosafot says that actually the basar is mutar lekamrei, and everybody agrees that it's mutar. Normally when it comes to flesh on Shabbat, we say that it's mutar, even if it's not kosher or not edible, because you can give it to the dogs to eat. So it still has utility on Shabbat, it's not mukseh. But here you can't do that because it's kodshim. It's a korban, so you can't throw it out to the dogs. So he says, because of bizayon kodshim, everybody agrees that it's mutar to move the basar. Basar is mutar to carry. Well, if the basar is mutar to carry, and the Sefer Torah is mutar to carry, and you can carry the tik for the Sefer Torah, you should better carry the or for the basar. So why does the Gemara reject that and say no? Halcha, in our case here, by the Sefer Torah, it's buses the davar mutar. There, by the Korban HaPesach, it's a buses the davar asur. Why is it a buses the davar asur? So Tosafot says, because, v'had the kamar halcha, be buses the davar asur. Why does the Gemara then say it's a buses the davar asur? Tehainu kodem shenishchata. Before you shechted the animal, flesh, everything inside was asur. And you have the skin around it. So the skin became a buses the davar asur. Now, when you shecht the animal, you made the basar mutar. But just because you made the basar mutar doesn't mean you can change the status of the or now to something that is a basis ledavar ha-mutar. If when you entered into Shabbat, or when you entered into Yom Tov, it was a basis ledavar ha-asur, it doesn't automatically become or just become a basis ledavar mutar just because there's no longer Easter on it. You light the candles on the candelabra, and then the candles blow out. That doesn't make it now a basis ledavar ha-mutar because it became mukseh when you came into Shabbat, and that's the way it will remain through the entire Shabbat. So to over here, the or, when you entered into Shabbat, was carrying a live animal. It's carrying something that's mukseh. Just because now you shechted the animal, and all of a sudden the basar is mutar now, doesn't mean that the or will change its status and become a basar ledavar ha-mutar. So that's what Tosafot says, is the Gemara's question, why, how could you compare the cases? The or is still a basar ledavar asur, whereas the tik is a basar ledavar ha-mutar. So that's how he differs from Rashi in explaining that piece of the Gemara. This is what they said to him. Im matzilim tik shel sefer, im a sefer, v'afu pishesh b'tocho ma'ot. You'll have to save the cover of the Sefer Torah along with the Sefer Torah, even though there is money deposited in there. So then, l'natalta or agav basar, certainly we should carry the or because of the basar over here. You can carry the tik ha-sefer because of the ma'ot that are in it. Certainly you can carry the or because of the basar that's in it. Again, the word says midami. As I explained before, it's not so simple that you're just carrying the ma'ot that is mukseh. You also have the Sefer Torah in there. Anyway, look at that, then you have two things inside of the tik. You have money, and you have the Sefer Torah. That's basis davar asur and mutar. You have two things there. You have the Sefer Torah, which is mutar, and you have the ma'ot, which are asur. Basis davar asur mutar is mutar. That basis is mutar to move. It does not take on the properties of muksa in that case. That's completely mutar. Hacha kulo naseh basis davar asur. Over here, you have nothing besides isur. You have the basar, which is asur, and then you're trying to use the or to carry it. There's nothing else there. There's no heter there to carry it. There is a discussion within the Rishonim about what does it mean to be a basis ledavar asur, ledavar hamutar. Over here, it's clear that the Sefer Torah is worth much more than the money. When you look at it as being a basis ledavar asur and mutar, the mutar side clearly weighs heavier in this equation because it's more chashuv. So that's a question that comes up in terms of Shabbat, in terms of, for instance, carrying candles on a tray, putting candles on the table. If you put mutar items on there as well, does the value of the mutar items have to be at least in some sort of proportion to the asur item? Here you have silver candlesticks, and now all of a sudden you put on a salt shaker on top of the tray. Is that enough to make it a basis ledavar asur or mutar? Or do we say, no, look, the value of the candlesticks is so much greater than that of the salt that it's really a basis ledavar asur? So the Sam Rishonim said that there has to be a balance in value between the two items. Others believe as long as there's hat there, and especially with regards to the Shabbat, where the candlesticks will be asur, and the salt shaker will be mutar, in that case, the relative value of the salt shaker becomes greater to you on Shabbat, because it's something you can use, as opposed to the candlesticks, that's relative utility. And that might be enough to even it out. That is a discussion in the beginning of Beitza. There, some of the Rishonim discussed this issue of how balanced does it have to be. In our case over here, it's not really relevant because the Sefer Torah is clearly more valuable than the money that's inside of the tik. So Gemara says, if you're allowed to carry a cover or a sack of some sort that has money in it from outside, let's seal both Sefer Torah, in order to save the Sefer Torah, alone to tell or agav basar, then certainly you should be able to carry the or because of the basar. So now we come to a case where we actually are parallel. Here you're picking up a sack or a bag full of money. That's just Isur, and you're taking the cover to take the Isur along to go grab the Sefer Torah. Similar to taking the or, the skin here, to carry the basar, to carry the flesh along with it. So now we've reached a point where, okay, the cases sound the same. The only problem is, where did the Gemara come up with that? How does it know you're allowed to carry a bag full of money to go get the Sefer Torah? That's not one of the cases mentioned in our Mishnah. That's not one of the situations where we said it was mutar. And that's what the Gemara says right away. V'hi gufa minolan. How do you know that that's true? How do you know that taking a bag full of money to save the Sefer Torah is allowed? He says, well, because in our Mishnah it says that if you find a bag right there full of money with the Sefer Torah, that you don't have to throw out the money. You can just take everything at once and go. So maybe it's Uyinami Matina. So if you could take it out with the Sefer Torah, certainly you should be able to bring it to save the Sefer Torah. It says, Midami, those two cases are not parallel. When he's in the house and he's got the Sefer Torah with the money in it, he's got to make a move quickly to get the Sefer Torah out before the fire comes. Over here, he has to run away anyway to go get the bag, to bring it over here with the money in it to save the Sefer Torah. While he's on the way to get the Sefer Torah, he can just turn the bag upside down and let the money fall out on his way to the Sefer Torah. And that will not cause any delay. The removal of the money from the bag on his way to save the Sefer Torah will not cause him any delay. It will not be a problem in saving the Sefer Torah. On the other hand, when you're trying to move the Sefer Torah from the Dileika and there happens to be money in there, tearing to take out the money or to remove the money from the bag might cause a delay that would be a huge loss in terms of the fire Sefer Torah will catch fire. So over there we say just take it out and then we'll worry about the issue afterwards. But here you have an opportunity to dump the money on the way to getting the Sefer Torah. Ela Amar Mar Bar Rav Ashi. So Mar Ravashi goes back, Lolam Kidamrina Bikara. Let's go back to stage one. Back to the beginning of the Gemara. And that, the Kakashalach, well, what was the problem with stage one in the Gemara? Stage one in the Gemara was that they compared it to the case in our Mishnah. They said, Imatzilim tika sefer, imatzifer, lo nafshita da pesach me'oro. If you save the tika sefer, the cover of the sefer with the sefer, certainly we should be able to be mafshita pesach me'oro. We would be able to flay the pesach. Question that we asked over there was, wait a minute, you're comparing apples and oranges because tika sefer with the sefer is tiltol. That simple din derabbanon, it's mukse, it's a din derabbanon. We can waive it in certain situations where a person's ba'ola momono. Hefshet or skinning the animal is a din de'oraita. So how could you do that? So that's the Gemara has to go back now and address that issue. How do we address that issue? Or he doesn't need the skin. He's going to flay the animal, not for its skin. In the Mishkan, the reason that you flayed the animal was because you wanted the hide, not because you wanted to get inside the animal. They used the hide for part of the covers of the Mishkan. So their purpose in flaying the animal was to get to the skin, not to get access to the animal. The answer to the Gemara is, oh, bayi leidor. The Gemara says, v'ha, abayi v'rovo da'amri tervayu. Don't they both agree? Moder Rabbi Shimon pasuk reishi v'lo yomut. Rabbi Shimon agrees when there's a pasuk reishi, when it's inevitable that's what's going to happen, it's still considered to be a suwar. The Gemara answers, the shakilei bibarzei. They took it off bibarzei. Now the Rishonim are going to address this answer differently based on their opinions within Pasik Reshe. If we want to suggest over here that the or is not problematic because you don't really want the or, you want to get inside of it. So that's a Rashi, zeno tzarich lo or. Ve'eno mitkavein lafshit mishum ha'or. He's not intending to do the afshata because of the skin. Now it's similar to the way that you did afshet in the Mishkan. So this sounds something like davar sheino mitkaven. He's not kaven to do the afshet. Also, quasi malacha shein tzricha legufa. Over here, it might be a little different. Generally, malacha tzricha legufa is that you want to do the malacha. You just don't want it for the same intent as in the Mishkan. Over here, he doesn't even want malacha. He doesn't even need the or. Is irrelevant to him, completely irrelevant to him. And he's really davar sheino mitkaven. He has no intent to do the malacha of hefshet. He simply wants to get access to the animal inside, to the fats that he needs to put on the mizbeach. So in that case, it's davar sheino mitkaven. But we know, Abayin Bava, we've seen this numerous times, say that Rabbi Shimon says Even when somebody is davar she'en mitkaven, if it's inevitable that you will do the melacha, then that's not called davar she'en mitkaven anymore. It's pasuk reishe velo yamut, and then you are chayav. Then it's a problem, according to Rabbi Shimon and Machloket and the Rishonim, what exactly that means that you're chayav, what the problem is. But now we're up to pasuk reishe velo yamut. So now we have to solve that problem and say it's not pasuk reishe velo yamut. The Aruch is going to solve it in his way. The Aruch says that when it's pasuk reishe, the lo nechale. You do a pasuk reishe that is not what you want. It's not something that's beneficial to you. In that instance, then we say that mutar legamre. And this is one of his proofs to his position, is our Gemara right here. Numerous examples. We saw one of them already, which was the weeding in the field. The Gemara says, oh, when you pull out the weeding in the field, how come that's not a problem? Said, davar she'en mitkaven. Gemara says, what do you mean? It's a pasuk reishe. Gemara said, it's ba'arad dechavre. He's doing it in his friend's field. So, alright, so he did it in his friend's field. What does that do? So Rashi and Tosafot over there say, oh, delo nechale, but delechbele, he doesn't really care about cleaning up his friend's field. He doesn't care about helping out his friend's field. So it's a pasuk reishe that he does not interested in. So that's what the Aruch says. You're right. Pasuk reishe that you're not interested in? Mutar legamre. That's what that Gemara says. Tosafot, on the other hand, over there says, no, when it's a pasuk reishe, delo nechale, it's still osur midrabanan. It becomes a malacha shein tzricha legufa. It's osur midrabanan. So he has to reread the Gemara over there. Another proof to the Aruch's position is from a Gemara in Sukkah. Gemara in Sukkah says if you have a hadas, you have a hadas, but the problem is that the hadas is not kasher because it has too many berries on it. It has berries on it and leaves on it. If you have berries and leaves, if there are more berries than leaves, it's not a kosher hadas. Simple way to solve the problem is to pick the berries off the hadas. Now you have a kosher hadas. Problem with that is that you are mitakein on Yom Tov. You're making the hadas kosher on Yom Tov. It wasn't kosher before, now you make it kosher on Yom Tov. Gemara says, oh, it's davar she'enu mitkaven. It's not intending to make it into a kosher hadas. Gemara says, again, it's pasuk reishe. Gemara says, itle hoshana achrite. He has another hadas. He doesn't need this hadas. Alright, what does that do for you if he doesn't need another hadas? According to the Aruch, it's great. It says, pasuk reishe lo nechale. I'm not interested in this hadas. I don't need the hadas. I need the berries. I don't need the hadas. Because I already have another hadas. That's a pasuk reishe lo nechale mutar legamre, according to the Aruch. Second proof of the Aruch. The third proof of the Aruch is from our Gemara right here. It says, what's going on? They have a pasuk reishe. Gemara says here that the shokile bibarze. He takes it off with barze, with sharp instruments. Now, what does that mean? It takes off. He doesn't take it off in the way that you would flay. When you flay the animal, you want the skins. You want to keep it as a single piece. You want to keep it so that it's usefulness, utility afterwards. If you slice it into strips, or you cut it down, you rip it apart, it's not going to be useful anymore. So then it becomes a pasuk reishe delo nechale. Aruch says that's mutar legamre. So the third proof of the Aruch's position, that when you have a pasuk reishe delo nechale, it's mutar legamre. The last proof for the Aruch's position is going to come up in the Gemara Frodan and Rabbi Elazar de Mila, again, where the Gemara seems to indicate if you bring somebody else in that's not the father with regards to cutting off a beheret on a milah, that would be fine, because it would be a pasuk reishe delo nechale that is mutar. Obviously, Tosafot can't learn that way, because Tosafot believes pasuk reishe lo nechale is still usur mi derabanan. That's not going to help you over here. So Rashi gives one solution to the problem. He says, the shakalei bebarze, v'tichot akot, mafshit v'otech. He slices it off in very thin pieces. De'ein derech hafshata bekach. V'la malachuhu elish v'ot. Rashi says, you're not doing the malach of hefshet. Malach of hefshet is to take off the skin in its entirety. To take it off in a single piece. When you slice into thin strips of skin, that is not called hefshet. So Rashi says, we're not even in the parsha of a din d'oraita. We moved it over to a din d'rabbanan because this is a shinoi. It's a complete change in the malacha. It's not the normal way to do the malacha. Yes, it'll still be osur mi d'rabbanan. It certainly will not be osur mi d'oraita. Once you drop it down to d'rabbanan, then you're dealing with equal cases. You're dealing with d'rabbanan and hefshet. You're dealing with d'rabbanan and tilto. We saw before that the Rabbanim waived an Isur Darabanan in certain circumstances, so they'll also waive it over here. So Rashi says it's not an issue anymore at Pasuk Reishe. We dropped it out of the world of Pasuk Reishe, and we made it a Shinoi in the Malacha, which makes it completely outside the realm of Hefshet. That's the way Rashi deals with it. Tosafot, on the other hand, says, doesn't like Rashi's explanation, says, V'nir l'ri, the Lekka afilu Shvut. There's not even an Isur Darabanan here. The Einu Mafshit, Kishur Chashivut or Yachad. He's not even doing something that would even be called Hefshet. Hefshet needs a certain minimum amount of skin in it. If you don't get that minimum amount of skin, you're not even doing hefshet. It's not called hafshata. And he says, basically, that there's a definition of the malacha of hefshet. Part of the definition of the malacha of hefshet is that there's a minimum shear, just like by kotev. When you write on Shabbat, there's a minimum shear. To have the malacha of kotev, you need to write two otiyot. You don't write two otiyot, you're not writing on Shabbat. So same thing over here. When you are doing hefshet in pieces that are smaller than something that would ever be flayed, that's not called hefshet anymore. It's not anything near. It's not even a shinui hefshet. We're not even in the world of hefshet, according to Tosafot. And that's why it would be mutar the gamre over here. So Rashi and Tosafot deal with the issue by taking away the Isur de Uraita by simply saying that either it's a shinui like Rashi, that it's an Isur de Rabbanan, or according to Tosafot, it's not even in the world of hefshet. That's why it's mutar over here. That's the position of Rashi and Tosafot as opposed to the Oroch. You can see here on the side by under the name Mishpat. Oroch, Perish, Barza, Nikavim. Makes holes in it. He punctures the skin. It's clear he doesn't want the skin. He's not flaying it for the skin because he wouldn't punch holes in it if he wanted the skin. Therefore, it is Ein lo hanami menu v'lo dami lo pasik reshe. You don't have hana from it, and therefore it's not similar to pasik reshe. That is why he calls it what we would call pasuk reshe lo nechle. It's interesting how he phrases it here, that in lo hanam imenu, he has no benefit from it. And that makes it a pasuk reshe lo nechle, and therefore it is mutar. The Gemara asks, lehechan matzilin oto, to where can you save the Sefer Torah? So in our Mishnah, there was an argument. It says that you're allowed to save it to a mavui she'enu miflash. Ben meter omer afle miflash. So the Chachamim say you can only save it to a place that's not miflash, that's not a thoroughfare, whereas Rabbi Ambatera says you can even go into a thoroughfare. I explained the Mishnah according to the simplest and the way we pass from the Halacha in terms of Mifulash and Enu Mifulash. The Mifulash means that it's open on two sides and there are two walls. And Enu Mifulash means it's closed on three sides and the fourth wall is open. That's how I explained it. The Gemara here is going to explain it differently. It's going to take different opinions within Mifulash to try to establish the Mishnah in that way. The reason they do that is because they don't want either the Chachamim or Ben Batera's position to be too extreme. They want to understand what's their position or what they're arguing about. The Gemara says, Hechi dami Mifulash, Hechi dami Sheinu Mifulash. What's the case of Mifulash? And what's the case of Eino Mifulash? Amar Rav Chista, Shlosh Mechitzot Ushnei Lechayin. If you have three walls and two lechis meaning at the open side, you have a lechi, a post that sits on each side of the doorway. Zeu Mavoi Sheinu Mifulash. That's called Eino Mifulash. Gimel Mechitzot Vilechi Echad. If you have three walls and on the fourth side you only put up one post over there, Zeu Mavoi HaMifulash. That's called Mifulash. Bitarvayu Aliba de Rabbi Eliezer, and they're both subscribing to the position of Rabbi Eliezer, the Tanan. Hechsher Mavoy. How do you make a Mavoy mutar to carrying it? Bitshamayomim lechi vikorah. You have to put on both a lechi, a post, and a korah beam across the top. Bitalalomim o lechi o korah. One or the other. You don't need both. Rabbi Eliezer Omer shnei lechayim. You need two lechis in order to be matir over here. This is the machloki between them. The Chachamim say that it's a case of Enu Mifulash, which means that it's three walls with two lechis on there. That's something that you could carry any time on Shabbat. That's something where, if you had an Eruv in there, you had a Shittuf Mivaot, it would work completely, because you have three walls plus two lechayim. According to Rabbi Eliezer, that's completely mutar to carry into that area. On the other hand, Ben Batera says we have an additional heter, additional dispensation here because of the difficult situation. Therefore, if there's only one lechi at the end here, we're going to still allow you to carry into this mavoi. Even though normally you couldn't carry in there, here we're going to allow you to carry into the mavoi. So now, Gemara says, wait a minute. According to the Chachamim, what type of dispensation did you have over here? Amalei, Rabba, Gimel Mechitzov, Lechi, Echad. Mifulash kari lei? That's number one. First of all, three walls and one lechi, that's not called mifulash. Ve'od, l'rabbanan, natzil etokoch lo meshkim. According to Rabbanan, you have a full-fledged mavoy or reshuta yachid here, but you should be able to carry into it. You have three walls plus two lechis, there's nothing missing. There's no dispensation over here. What dispensation do you have? You're carrying it into an area that you could carry even food and drink into. You don't have to have a special dispensation just to carry Sifrei Kodesh. You could carry anything into that area. So that can't be the explanation of the Machloket. Okay, Rabbi says this is the Machloket between them. Shtei Mechitzot Ushnei Lechayim. We're talking about two Mechitzot, two walls, and then the opposite walls are open. So you have a thoroughfare that goes through and two walls on the side. Ushnei Lechayim. And then you have a Lechi on each side. On each opening side, you have a lechi. Ze mavoi she'enu mifulash. Shtei mechitzot v'lechi echad. If you only have the two walls and one lechi, ze mavoi mifulash. V'tarvayu alibi d'Rabbi Yehuda. And they're both going to Rabbi Yehuda. We saw earlier in the Masechta, in the first parak. D'tanya yeter ogen amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda has this special halacha with regards to the Rishut HaRabim, which is, Mi she'esh lo shnei batim, shnei tzidei Rishut HaRabim. You own a house on two sides of the public thoroughfare. Oseh lechem mikan velechem mikan, o korea mikan velechem mikan. You put up a lechi on either side, or a korea on either side. Oseh minotem behem, so you can carry between your houses. So if you have houses that sit opposite each other in Rishut HaRabim, and you want to carry from one house to the other through the Rishut HaRabim. So what do? You basically close off the Rishut HaRabim. You're not going to close off the Rishut HaRabim, but you do it by, in a symbolic way. You put a lechi on one end, a lechi on the other end. It looks like, now it creates like a fourth wall, third and fourth wall here, and you're able to carry across according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim disagree, and they say, Amrlo, Eimarvin Rishut HaRabim Bekach. You can't make an Eiluv in Rishut HaRabim. Rishut HaRabim is Rishut HaRabim. You can't carry in Rishut HaRabim. You can't change the status of Rishut HaRabim by using a lechi and a korah. That's not the way to change the status of Rishut HaRabim. But what Rabbi is suggesting here is the Machoket HaRamish is a libid Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who says you can take a Rishut HaRabim and you can make it into a quasi-private domain by putting up a lechi on each side. So the Chachamim say over here, put up a lechi on each side, and then you can carry. If you have the Sefer Torah, you can carry it into that area, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Ben Matera says, even if you have a lechi on one side, we have a special dispensation here, that even with the three walls, instead of a fourth wall, you can carry out into that area. I mean, two walls plus a lechi is enough to allow you to carry into that area. Rabbi, according to your explanation, and if we're subscribing to the position of Rabbi Yehuda, and we're saying here we have two houses on the sides of Rishut HaRabim, two lechis, you have, according to Rabbi Yehuda, a perfectly fine place to carry. You can carry in there even Ochleinu Mashkim. You can carry from your house anything you want into that area. Forget about the special situation where it's a fire and you want to carry out a Sefer Torah. You can carry anything into there. Why do I need a special dispensation from the Mishnah for Sefer Torah? Carry what you like in there. Hela Amar Rav Ashi, and here we come to the final solution. Shlosh Mechitzot V'lechi Echad, Zem Avoy She'enu Mifulash. You have three walls and one lechi. That's a mavoi she'enu mifulash. Kimo b'chitzo b'lo lechi ze mavoi mifulash. That's considered a mavoi mifulash. V'afilu l'Rabbi Elezer tamar b'inan lechayim hani milid oklim u'mashkin. V'al sefer Torah b'chad lechi tzalgi. Rav Ashi is still subscribing to the position of Rabbi Eliezer, because otherwise if you have three walls and a lechi according to the Chachamim, that's a perfectly good place to carry into for anybody. One lechi, that's what we do today. Three walls and one lechi, that's fine. So we still have to be scribing to Rabbi Elezer, who requires two lechayim. But, nevertheless, the Chachamim say, even if you have three walls and one lechi, even though Rabbi Elezer will not allow you to carry normally into this area, you have special dispensation in the case of Dleika with the Sefer Torah, we allow you to carry it into that area. So that's what it says. Ochlim HaMashkim you can't carry there, but the Sefer Torah you're allowed to carry there. Ben Batera then comes and says, even three walls and nothing on the fourth side, you can still carry into that area Sefer Torah, because it's all a din d'rabbanan. Midoraita, the three walls make it into a Rishut HaYachid. You have Rishut HaYachid here. The fourth wall being open is only a problem midirabbanan. And the Rabbanan instituted lechi and korah to solve that problem. But midoraita, it's mutar. The Rabbanan waived their isur in this situation in a case where you need to save a Sefer Torah. So what the Gemara accomplished by doing this is to make both the Chachamim and Beteira only dealing with an issue de Rabbanan, and both of them dealing with an issue de Rabbanan where normally you would not be allowed to carry into this area. According to the Chachamim, you normally would not be able to carry in this area because we're subscribing to Rabbi Elezer's opinion that you need two lechis in order to be matir in area, and here you only have one lechi. Nevertheless, we allow you to carry the Sefer Torah into this area of three walls and one lechi. Ben Beteira goes one step further and says, we waived everything midirabbanan here. If you have no lechis at all, no lechayim here whatsoever, just three walls, midaraita, that's a Rishut HaYachid. That's enough to allow you to carry in a Sefer Torah. You're not even going to have one step down, two steps down. It's totally, you're allowed to move it in there even though you can't carry in there at all. Alright, that explains the mission between Mifulash and Mifulash. Again, it's not the standard definition of what Mifulash and Mifulash is, because otherwise you run into a problem either with Ben Beteira or the Chachamim. Either the Chachamim sound too simple, because if you can carry other things in there, you should be able to carry Sefer Torah, or Ben Beteira seems too extreme, which is saying basically something that would otherwise be a Rishut HaRabim d'oraita that we're allowing you to carry into. That's not true. You can't violate an Isur d'oraita to save the Sefer Torah. We're only going to allow you to violate Isurei d'Rabbanan. So we had to balance between them. That's why we come up with the solution of Rav Ashi. That's in the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. And we're missing either one or two lechayim in this case. Okay, next Mishnah. Matzilin, mazon, gimel, seudot. You're allowed to save three meals from the fire. Haru'oi le'adam le'adam, ru'oi le'beima le'beima. You can save meals for our people, and you can save meals for the animals. I mean, they're separate. Ketzad. Naflad le'ka b'leile Shabbat. If the fire fell on the night of Shabbat before you ate, then you need three meals. You need Friday night's meal, Shabbat morning meal, and Sudash Lishit. So you need three meals to say. On the other hand, Bishacharit, if your fire falls on Shacharit, Matzilin mazon bet sot. Then you can save two meals because you still have the morning meal left and suda shlishit. B'mincha. If it falls around mincha time, then you can save mazon suda achat because you have one meal that remains for the Shabbat that you're allowed to save. B'yosi omer, the olam matzilin mazon shalosh suudot. You could always save three suudot no matter when you are on Shabbat. That's the standard number of meals that you're allowed to save on Shabbat. We're not going to measure depending what time on Shabbat, what part of the day on Shabbat. You're allowed to save three meals, and that's it. Now, the truth is that you should be able to take out much more. There's no restriction here. We're dealing with food. Food is mutar. Food's allowed to be eaten on Shabbat, and you should be able to take out as much as you want. There's no problem inherently, as opposed to the Sefer Torah issue where we had the ma'ot, and we dealt with number one, you had muksah, number two, you were taken out to a place that you're not allowed to carry. So over there, we had to have dispensations because of the fire. We allowed you to take these things out. Over here, you don't have that situation. Over here, you have a situation where it's no mukseh, and you're taking it out to a chatzer. A chatzer is considered a place that you could be metaltel. So you're not a problem mukseh, you're not a problem of carrying. What is the problem? Worried about the fire. Worried about if we don't allow someone to take it out, then they'll extinguish the fire. If we let them take out too much, they'll also extinguish the fire because they'll be rushing to go back and forth, back and forth. They'll extinguish the fire because they're trying to save more. If we give them a limited scope of what they can save, they'll be fine. They'll let the fire go. They won't put the fire out because they've saved the food they need. On the other hand, they won't be going crazy to get all the food out and then put out the fire because of that. So there's a gzeira here preventing you from doing more than you would otherwise be allowed to do because of Dinei Shabbat. Mar says, Michte, Be'etera Katarech. He's working Be'etera. Not Zilpeh. Let him save as much as he wants. So Amarovo, that's the answer to what I just explained to you. If we allow a person to take more than the minimum three meals that he'll need on Shabbat, he'll continue to go in, and he'll say, look, I just have a little more to go, but the fire is spreading so fast, he'll put out the part of the extinguished part of the fire to allow himself more time to get out what he wants. So therefore, we prevented him from taking everything. We just say, take the minimum that you need, the shlosh suudot that you need. That's Rova's explanation. Amar Abaye, Abaye says, Elahad Tanya, what about the brayta nishmer lo chavit brosh gagol? If you have a barrel of wine that breaks on the roof, you're allowed to bring another utensil and place it on the ground, capture the wine that is flowing off the roof. It's leaking, now it's flowing off the roof. You can put a bucket down there to catch it, and that's fine. You can't bring a kli from the outside or another kli and then try to catch it in the air. Or hold it up against the roof and have the wine go directly into the kli. You have to do it. It has to be done in a passive manner. You have to leave the kli there and let it drip or flow down into the kli. But I don't want you holding the kli, catching the stream coming down or putting it up against the roof and holding it there because we're afraid that you're going to carry it from Yishut Ervayim. Hatam, my gzera yiko. What's the gzera over there? What's the problem over there? Exactly what Ira just said, that you're going to carry it Yishut Ervayim. If we allow you to hold the kli, then you're going to come engaged, involved in trying to save the wine. And you're going to go, I need another one, and run out, and you're going to grab more kelim to come and save it. When you do that, you're going to be in violation of carrying Mishut Rabim to Mishut Yachid, because you're not going to be focused. Say, don't do it. On the other hand, if you just leave the kli on the floor, and you're not actively involved, you have time to think. You have time to adjust the situation. You're not going to go grab a kli from Mishut Rabim. That's that brayta. But what Abaye points out is that there is a gzera that where a person is going to be behol, and he's going to grab something from Mishut Rabim and bring it. He says the same thing over here. Achanami gzera shemi yavi kli derech Mishut Rabim. Abaye says the problem here is not what Rova says is adam behol amomo no, and therefore he's going to extinguish the fire. Problem here is that a person is going to be so engaged in saving the stuff from the house that he'll forget, and he'll bring something to Mishut Rabim or take something out to Mishut Rabim. We don't want a person so engrossed or engaged in the activity that he might come to forget at Shabbat. According to Rava, the problem is that you forget at Shabbat and you're trying to run, and I don't know if he forgets at Shabbat, but you're trying to grab all the stuff, but oh, Mamano, you put out the fire. According to Baye, you'll be so engaged that you forget that it's Shabbat and you go grab something through the Rishut Rabim or you're going to take something out to the Rishut Rabim. By Rava and Baye, you come up with different reasons to suggest what the problem is here in our Mishnah, why, even though it's mutar, that heter that you're taking out, food, and ochlim, and number two is you're taking it to a chatzer, which is completely mutar. So an activity that would be otherwise on Shabbat, you could do it all day, you want all day long, you could take things in and out of the chatzer with food. Nevertheless, over here, we have to stop you in order to prevent there being a bigger problem from coming about, either extinguishing the fire or carrying a Rishut Rabim. Gufa. Nishbelo chavit perosh kago, mevi kli yom aniach tachtel, bevach lo yevi kli acher, viklo kli acher vitzareif. Nizdam in lo orchin, he gets guests all of a sudden. Mevi kli acher, vikoleit kli acher mitzareif. If he has guests that show up, he allow you to do what you otherwise would not be allowed to do, which is we allow you to put up a kli, and we allow you to not only catch the stream midway, we allow you to hold this kli all the way up to where it's flowing out, and it's fine, because you have orchim. You have usage for it, you need it, that Shabbat, and you need to get the wine for those orchim that are coming. The Gemara says here, but that's only true if the guests were coming. Can't first capture it, and then afterwards invite over the guests. Oh, yasmin, v'chakach klot. You have to first invite the guests, and then capture it. And you're not allowed to play games with this. Mishum Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda Amru, Marimim, you'll have to play games with this. So the simple way to explain this is, or the way you would have read the Gemara, is that here you have guests. If you had guests invited already, so then of course you can bring a kli and then you can capture the wine. Question is here, can you invite the guests now? All of a sudden invite guests that you need them right now, and then you go capture the wine. Do this at the last minute. That would be the Marim Bekach. Now Rashi says, Ein Marim Bekach, Zemein Orchim She'enam Tzrichim Lechol V'Yotiru. Rashi does not interpret it the simple way, which is Marim Bekach is that you invite the guests the last minute. That's the simple way to read the Gemara. Rashi reads it as, that you're not allowed to be Marim here, is that you're not allowed to invite Orchim that are not going to drink or eat anyway. They already had their meal, they already had what they needed. Don't invite those people over and then say, oh, I'm capturing the wine for them. Because that's called Harama. Then you're really not going to feed them, they're guests, but you're not going to feed them anything because they're not going to eat or drink. So there, we don't allow it. And Rabbi Yosef says, we do allow it, even though the guests are not going to eat. So that's the Harama according to Rashi, which is interesting, different than what you would have thought in the simple reading of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Lema b'plukta de Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua kamiflege. Let's say that this machloka here about whether you're allowed to play games or not, similar to a machloka we've seen between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. The Tanya Otov had been Oshna flew the boar on Yom Tov. You have a animal and its child that fell into a pit. We know that you're not allowed to shecht an animal and its child on the same day. So it's clear you're not going to be able to eat both these animals on Yom Tov. So one of the two animals is muksa. One of them you can eat for food on Yom Tov. The other one is going to be muksa because you won't be able to shecht it on Yom Tov. Right. Well, that's the way the Torah phrases it. There is a day that it's by the father as well. But the majority opinion is that it's only by mothers that it applies. That's correct. That's why I phrased it in the generic, it and its child, because of that problem. There is a machloka, but you're right. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Malet Arishon, Amunat Shochato, brings up the first one and the intent of shechting it. Which is allowed, because it's Yom Tov. Yom Tov, you can shecht the meat, so you can bring the first one out of the pit. Vasheni Yoselo Parnasabim Komo B'Shvil Shelo Yamut. The second one, he feeds, he gives him food, so he won't die. You can't bring him out, because you don't need him on Yom Tov. You can't shecht this animal on Yom Tov if you bring the second one out, because already the first one was designated for Shechita. Second one can't be shechted, because you're going to run into a problem with Vato Be'Beno. On the other hand, we're not going to allow you to let the animal die there, so you're allowed to bring food and supply the animal and take care of the animal in the pit itself. Shomer, Malinet, Arishon, Amanat, L'Shochato. You bring out the first one intending to shecht it. Veinu shochato. And then you don't do it. Umari mamala tasheni. He says, you know what? The first one wasn't big enough. It wasn't fat enough. It's not the right size. I need the other one. And then you bring up the second one to shecht it. Then you decide which one you want to shecht. So you play a little game that basically you say, I need it for Yom Tov. Then when it comes up, you say, that's not the right one. I want the other one for Yom Tov. So that's how it lets him get it out. The Gemara is going to say that maybe the cases are not necessarily comparable. Mimai, how do you know that they're arguing the same way? Dilma adkan lo kama Rabbi Elazar altam de efshar b'parnasa. Maybe Rabbi Elazar says over there you can leave one of the animals in the pit because you can feed him down there, you can take care of him there. V'hochadol efshar lo. Over here you have no option. In our case, by the wine and the guests, if you don't take care of the wine's going into it's going to get run off and be a waste. So if you don't save it, then we're going to have a problem. Maybe there we can use Harama to save the wine. To leave one of the animals in the pit, it's Tzar Balei Chayim. So he allows you to play games to get both the animals out in order to avoid the problem of Tzar Balei Chayim. Of Tzar Balei Chayim. Here we have no mitigating factor like Tzar Balei Chayim. You have hefsed. You have a loss. Not Tzar Balei Chayim. Tzar Balei Chaim is a much higher consideration than Efsed. If that's the case, then maybe over here he would say no. Lo, that he would say that he would not allow Harama. So Gemara says we won't compare the cases. We're not going to say that the machloket there and the machloket here is the same machloket in Harama because you could differentiate. Tana Banan. Yitzil pat nikia, inu matzil pat hadra'a. If you saved already, we'll call it white bread, then inu matzil pat hadra'a. Then you shouldn't save. We have in the Oruch Perish Lacham Av, a thicker bread. Rashi says that it's pat kibar, which is less clean. It's a coarser bread. It's basically whole wheat. In their day, whole wheat was considered to be inferior. So things, times have changed. Their day, white bread was the purview of the rich. Because they had the ability to sift the flour and to let stuff go and not worry about it and have the finest flour and have white bread. The people who were poor ate the whole wheat bread. things even out, that the poor people live longer then, because the rich people were eating all the white bread. Right, obviously today it's different. So the patadra here is inferior flour, either because it's whole wheat or because it's not as good quality. That you can't bring up. Patadra, on the other hand, if you saved bread that was of this inferior quality, matzo patnikia, then you can go in again and get another pat, which is better. So you can upgrade, you can't downgrade. So that's what the Gemara says in terms of saving. Umatzilim yom ha-kippurim le-shabbat. Avalo mi-shabbat le-yom ha-kippurim. You can say from Yom Kippur into Shabbat, but you not can say Mishabbat li Yom HaKippurim. So Rashi explains over here. Yom Kippurim bechad b'Shabbat. Yom Kippur falls out on Motzei Shabbat. Da'al lo ochil ad orta. Ad orta lichach v'laitim. If he's going to save it on Shabbat for Yom HaKippurim, he can't eat on Yom Kippur. He has to wait until Motzei Yom HaKippurim in order to eat it. So that's why the Gemara says, don't save it on Shabbat for Yom Kippur. Wait till Motzei Yom Kippur. Motzei Yom Kippur, you can work on your own. You can fix it up. You can take care of it on your own. You have time to fix up and get the meal that you need. So that's why we say, don't save it. On the other hand, if you're on Yom Kippur going into Shabbat, if you don't save it on Yom Kippur, you have nothing to eat on Shabbat. You can't prepare on Shabbat. Shabbat has no dispensation to prepare. And neither does Yom Kippur. So if you don't save it, you have nothing to eat on Shabbat. There we allow you to save it. Ve'en tzarech lomar mi Shabbat li Yom Tov. Certainly from Shabbat to Yom Tov, you're not allowed to save. Because Yom Tov, you can prepare. Yom Tov, you have the heter ochel nefesh. So I'm not going to allow you to carry on Shabbat and take some things out on Shabbat because you don't need to prepare from Shabbat to Yom Tov. You can just do it on Yom Tov itself and prepare on Yom Tov itself. Mivo mishabbat l'shabbat haba'ah. And you can't save from this Shabbat for the following Shabbat because you have the intervening weekdays where you could deal with the issue. So we don't need to save the food today to keep it for a week from now. It's very interesting. Tosafot over here, he says, "Avalo mi Shabbat the Yom Kippurim perish b'kon just the Motzei Yom Kippurim." Can't save it from Motzei Yom Kippur. V'imto mar pshita. Of course not. The chol gomer hu. It's toru chol v'amayishna mi Shabbat the Motzei Shabbat. Why did the Gemara give an issue like, okay, you can't save from Shabbat to Yom Kippur? The Rashi says, well, you're not going to eat on Yom Kippur, so you're going to eat Motzei Yom Kippur. So that's basically saving from Shabbat to Chol. So why don't you just say Shabbat to Motzei, Shabbat you can't save? Oh, it's unbelievable. This Tosfot says something that we saw again on Friday's daf as well. The mitzvah le'chol b'motzei yom ha-kippurim. There's a special mitzvah to eat on Motzei Yom Kippurim. There's a sudas yom tov. That's what the Tosfot said on Friday's daf. That we blow the shofar at Ne'ilah to tell people, get ready, it's time for the Suda. You have a mitzvah of Suda Yom Tov now on Motzei Yom HaKippurim. As opposed to Shabbat, where it's not. What do you see here? Tosfot does not view Malav HaMalka in the same way as he views the meal on Motzei Yom HaKippurim. Saying Motzei Shabbat is just the Malav HaMalka. That's not a Yom Tov meal. That's not a special meal that you would save for. You can't save a meal for Motzei Shabbat. For Motzei Yom HaKippurim, that you would have a half a minute to save because that's a special meal. That's a Yom Tov meal. Then he gives other answers. V'ot, lefishit anu mutar yoter. Maybe the difference is that you've been fasting. So obviously we want to give you a bigger dispensation to take out to Motzei Yom Kippur versus Motzei Shabbat. Motzei Shabbat, you ate the whole Shabbat. So big deal, you don't have a meal on Motzei Shabbat. Yom Kippur, you haven't eaten all day. If you don't have a meal on Motzei Yom Kippur, it's going to be pretty painful. The last answer he gives is, well, you know, maybe we would allow you to save it to feed the children on Yom Kippur. So you have all these different reasons why Yom Kippur, Motzei Yom Kippur would be more chashuv than Motzei Shabbat. Now we move on. Taru banan. Shachach pat bitonur. He forgets the bread in the oven coming into Shabbat. V'kidesh alav ayom, and Shabbat started. He has the bread in there. If he leaves it in the oven, it's going to burn, and he'll have nothing to eat on Shabbat. It's the equivalent of a fire coming into your house and burning all the food in the house. So matzilin mazon shlosh sudot. You'll have to take out three sudot. You'll have to scrape out three sudot from the oven and leave the rest of the bread there. V'omer l'achirim, and he can say to other people, bo v'tzilu lachem, you can come and take three sudot as well. So now what we have here is basically each person's entitled to three sudot, because that's going to prevent people coming bahol amamono or extinguishing the fire. Say each person gets their three sudot to take it out. Ukushu rodeh lo yirdeh b'mardeh lo b'sakin. You scrape it out of the oven, don't scrape it out with the scraper, the normal way that they took it out of the oven, but use a knife, which is an unusual way to do it. Ini, why do you have to do that at all? Right here, there's some question about what pasuk they're quoting. If you look in Tosafot, Tosafot discusses whether it's Tochol Melachet Avudah Lo Tasu is the pasuk they quote in Beitza, which is a pasuk from Yom Tov. Over here, discussing Shabbat, they quoted a pasuk from Shabbat. Some question as to whether it should be the pasuk from Shabbat or the pasuk from Yom Tov. Tosafot in the end says it doesn't make a difference because they're equal. The only difference between them is Ochel Nefesh. But anyway, lo tasek o malacha, yatzat kiyat shofar v'diyat apashi chachma v'ena malacha. You're not allowed to do malacha on Shabbat. Shofar, blowing the shofar, is not a malacha. Scraping the bread out of the oven is not a malacha. It's a chachma. It's a type of skill, but it's not a malacha. Therefore, it's only Asur mi derabanan, not Asur mi deoraita. It's only Asur mi derabanan. Why are we asking you to do a shinoi over here? To take it out with a knife instead of scraping it out with a scraper. If the Rabbanan already said you could take out three sudot, they can also waive the restriction against scraping it out with a scraper. It's only an Isur de Rabbanan. So Gemara says, Kamad efshar lishnuyei mishaninan. You're right. En rachanayim, it's an Isur de Rabbanan. What we want to do is maximize the unusualness of the procedure here. For two reasons. One is that a person then will be more careful not to do something like extinguishing the fire, not to do something that's really Asur. And number two is that they won't extrapolate from this to other situations. If we let you do it, say, oh, every week I'll just come in and scrape out my bread, come in, I'll leave it in the fire and I'll scrape it out. No, this is an unusual situation. We're going to make you do it in an unusual manner so that you also remember that this is not a general dispensation for doing this. Right, that would be the conclusion from this Gemara, is that if there was no alternative besides the scraper, you could use the scraper, because then you have no other option and you have to change. Whatever you can change, you do. If you can't, then you can't. Now, Gemara says, Amar Rav Chista, Lo'olam yashkim adam lo'utzat Shabbat. From this, Rav Chista gives a little lesson, and he says a person should always get up early on Friday morning in order to deal with preparations for Shabbat. So you don't run into these problems where you're scraping the bread off going into Shabbat. So that was what we just read in this past week's parsha, Parsha B'Shalach, by the man. On the sixth day, they got the man, and then they prepared the food, the altar. They prepared it right away. When did the man fall? The man falls in the morning. So on the sixth day, on Friday, when it fell in the morning. And then it says, and then prepare it. When should you prepare it? On Friday morning, when the man fell. So you should be prepared. You should be coming in well prepared. Now, Amar Rabbi Abba, B'Shabbat, Chayav Adam B'Btzoa Al Shtei Kikarot. Here we have what otherwise is known as Lechem Mishneh. Because that's Tichtiv, Lechem Mishneh. Rabbi Abba says on Shabbat, a person has to break bread on two loaves, because it says in the Parsha, Lechem Mishneh. Oh, so that's a good question. What exactly did Rabbi Abba say over here? Why does he require you to break on two kikarot? Says, because it says, Lechem Mishneh. So Shaul says it's Zecher Leman. So that's one way to view it, that is Zecher Leman. We'll see in a second, maybe there's another way to view it. Rashi over here says something interesting. He says, Libtzoa. What does Rashi say? Birkat Hamotzi. Now, the simple interpretation of the word Libtzoa means to break bread. Modern day term is to cut the bread. So it's either to break the bread or cut the bread, al shtei kikarot. Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi says Libtzoa is Birkat Hamotzi, to make the bracha of Hamotzi. Chaim, based on this, wanted to say that maybe Birkat Hamotzi Alecha Mishneh has the same din as Kiddush. On Kiddush, you make the bracha, the Mekadesh makes the bracha on the wine, he drinks the wine, and you're Yotzei Kiddush. You don't have to drink the wine of the Kiddush. You could drink your own wine, you don't have to drink wine at all. You're still Yotzei the Kiddush in terms of Birkat HaKiddush Alayayin. Chaim says, based on this Rashi, the same is true by Lechem Mishneh. By Lechem Mishneh, you don't have to eat the Lechem Mishneh. Somebody has to make, the balabait has to make a birkat hamotzi alechem mishneh. That's what Rashi just said. Make birkat hamotzi alechem mishneh. Then you can eat your own bread. You can take your roll. You can eat bread in front of you. You don't have to worry about lechem mishneh. He wants in mechadish inside of Shita Rashi that the same thing will be true by lechem mishneh. Truth be told, not all the other Rishonim agree with Rashi. But at least according to Rashi, he wants to make that suggestion. Then we have a second statement here. Which is, Amar Rav Ashi chazina le the Rav Kahana, denaka tarte ubatza chada. That he used to take two loaves of bread to make the bracha of Hamotzi, and then only break one of the two loaves, or cut one of the two loaves. Amar, because it says, Laktuktiv. When it says about the man, it says that they gathered the man together. Now, how much did they gather? They gathered a double portion. When they ate it, did they really eat the double portion? No, they only ate a single portion. They ate one portion on Friday, and they ate the other portion on Shabbat. This is exactly what he says. You want to do it zecher leman? Like Shaul suggested before, you want to do zecher leman, what do? You take two loaves of bread, you make the bracha on the two loaves of bread, zecher leman, but then you only break on one of them, you break on one loaf, because that's what happened with the man. You had two loaves, and then you only broke bread on one of them. Rabbi Zeira Ava Batza Kula Sheruta. Rabbi Zeira then used to break a piece of bread, the Kula Sheruta. Rashi learns Sheruta means for the entire meal. That when he broke the bread, when he came and took off the piece of challah he was going to use, the Kavod Shabbat, he used to break off a piece big enough that it would satisfy him for the entire meal. That he wouldn't have to break another piece of bread. It was a sense of generosity, sense of kavod and oneg Shabbat, to break off a big piece that he could utilize for the entire meal, the bread that he would need for the entire meal. That's the way Rashi learns it. So according to Rashi, there's really no discrepancy here between the three opinions. You can reconcile all three opinions. There's a din of Lechem Mishneh. Along comes Rav Kahana and says, okay, the din of Lechem Mishneh only applies to the bracha itself, making the bracha, but not to breaking the bread. And then we have a last statement by Rabbi Zera that says, so when you break the bread, just break off a piece that's big enough to be utilized for the whole meal. So you have three opinions, and Rashi just says that they're each giving you a perspective on this din of Lechem Mishnah. They don't necessarily have to be arguing. On the other hand, the Rashba learns this differently. And the Rashba says, what does it mean, Lekulei Shirute? It means that you must slice through both loaves of bread that you made the bracha on. You can't break just one bread. You have to break both breads that you made the bracha on. Now, the Gra and the Kabbalists, the Zohar also, say not only have to break both loaves of bread, you have to break any loaf of bread that's there. Any loaf that's present, you have to break, in order to be yotze din of lechem mishneh, or this idea of kulei shiruta. That anything that you make the bracha on, that you have to break into two pieces. Now you have a machloket. Because it's clear here that the last opinion of Rabbi Zera says you have to break both loaves, whereas the previous opinion of Rav Kahana said you only have to break one loaf. So it's clear, according to the Rashba, that there is a machloket here in terms of lechem mishneh. There might even be a third opinion here, which is the first opinion says that you have to make the bracha al lechem mishneh, depending on how you read the Rashba's opinion. If you read the Rashba's opinion, you have to break all the loaves of bread. Then the first opinion that we brought, which was Rabbi Abba, might be that you only have to break two loaves. Rabbi Abba says you break two loaves. Then we have Rav Kahana saying you only have to break one loaf. And then we have Rabbi Zera saying you have to break all the loaves that are there. So you actually have a three-way machloket then, according to the Rashba. Whether it's a two-way or a three-way machloket, depending on what you think this final opinion is. Later, according to the Rashba, we have differences of opinions. Now, what would explain the difference between Rashi and the Rashba might have to do with why we eat Lechem Mishneh. The difference might arise from the fact that, is Lechem Mishneh Zecher Laman? That's what we've been saying until now. Zecher Laman, that you have Lechem Mishneh. Or, is the din of Lechem Mishneh that we have a din on Shabbat, that everything on Shabbat is kaful. Everything on Shabbat is double. Yes, the man indicated that Shabbat was also double. But everything on Shabbat is double, just like the korbanot. The korban tamid is brought every day in the Mikdash, is a single keves. What is the korban musaf for Shabbat? Is shnei kvasim. Just a double of the normal korban of the day. And that's what we talk about Shabbat, is always like the neshama yateira. Everything is doubled on Shabbat. This is inyan of doubling things on Shabbat. So maybe the reason for Lechem Mishneh and Shabbat, yes, it might derive partly from the man, but to have double of everything. So that might land you in a different situation. In Zecher the man, when you're talking about Zecher the man, you're right. Like Rashi says, you might make a bracha on two loaves, but you're going to only want to break one of those loaves. But why should you ever break on two loaves? On the other hand, if you think that the issue here is that everything is doubled on Shabbat, then the issue is not simply that Zecher the man and break on one loaf, it's you should break both loaves. You should break doubles of everything because the sense of feilut, generosity, oneg Shabbat, that everything is twice as much as the regular weekday. So that might explain the Rashba's opinion as to why he thinks that you have to break all the loaves or both loaves, as opposed to Rashi's opinion. In addition to that, there are a number of other questions that arise with Lechem Mishneh. One is, first, is it a din d'oraita or a din d'rabbanan? And that the poskim argue about. The Aruch HaShulchan seems to indicate it's a din d'oraita. Others seem to indicate that it's only a din de rabbanan. But it also comes up, for instance, on Yom Tov. Do you need Lechem Mishneh on Yom Tov? So there happens to be a Tosfot in Beitza. Tosfot on that bed and bed on Tosfot brings down Stira in the Midrashim, whether the man came down on Yom Tov or not. Two Midrashim, one Midrash says it did come down on Yom Tov, one said it didn't come down on Yom Tov. Now, if it's Zecher the man, it's easy to understand why on Yom Tov you'd have Lechem Mishneh as well. If it didn't fall on Yom Tov, then you had double portion on Erev Yom Tov, so you'd have Lechem Mishneh, Zecher the man. If you think the din of Lechem Mishneh is because everything on Shabbat is doubled, that's not true on Yom Tov. And so maybe on Yom Tov you would not have a din of Lechem Mishneh. That's one. The next thing is, are women chayavot in Lechem Mishneh? There are two opinions. The Rabbeinu Tam suggests that, an unbelievable Rabbeinu Tam, we don't have it here in our Tosafot, but it's quoted both by the Ran, as well as, I think the Shutzo quotes it. Rabbeinu Tam says, Af hein hayu ba'oto anes. He quotes this for the principle of why they're chayavot in Lechem Mishneh is because they were also part of the nes of the mon. So it's clear that he's viewing it as Zecher the mon. And he's saying that the women are included because it's afein ayu ba'oto anes. Now that has major implications. First of which is that Tosafot in other places says afein ayu ba'oto anes is only applicable by dinei derabanan, not dinei deoraita. If you believe that Lechem Mishneh is only din derabanan, fine. But if you think that Lechem Mishneh is a din deoraita, then the Rabbeinu Tam is applying afein ayu ba'oto anes to a din deoraita, which would be very interesting. Because of that, he says that the women are chayavot. The Ran says, what do you need that for? We know there's a din on Shabbat that women are chayavot, like men. Anything that a man is chayavan on Shabbat, so does the woman. That's the din of Zohar v'Shamor. But that might be well understood according to those opinions that say it's not Zecher the man, but rather it's a din in Feilut HaShabbat, doubling things on Shabbat. When you double things on Shabbat, that's a din in Shabbat itself. It's not a din because in Erev Shabbat, they got two loaves in Erev Shabbat, and there's Zecher the Nes, we do it. But that may not be a din in Shabbat. That's why Rabbeinu Tam goes to Afayin Obeh to Anes. But something when you're talking about doubling on Shabbat, that's a din in Shabbat. A woman should be chayavot. That's why you may not need the din of afena yobot or anes. The last question arises with suda shlishit. Do you need lecha mishneh for suda shlishit? So let's think about this. What should have been, just if you had pashtut, if you didn't have any of the fancy footwork, what happened was that they got the man on Friday morning. They took the man, they got a double portion, they baked it into, they called it four loaves. They baked into four loaves for the meals that they would need it for. So what do they have? They have four loaves now. For Friday, they ate one of the loaves. Friday night, they ate the second loaf. For Shabbat morning, they ate the third loaf. And the fourth loaf, they ate for Suda Shlishit. If I lay that out, then what you have is, when you're on Friday night, you have Lechem Mishneh, because you still have three loaves left. So you break one of those loaves. Shabbat morning, you have two loaves left, you break one of them. But by Suda Shlishit, you only have one loaf left. So Mipashtut, it would have been that Suda Shlishit does not require Lechem Mishneh. And that's the way that the Torah quotes that you don't need Lechem Mishneh for Suda Shlishit. On the other hand, the Shulchan Aruch brings down the possibility that you do need Lechem Mishneh even Suda Shlishit. And on top of that, the Ramah brings down quotes from the Budraham, who says that any meal you have on Shabbat, you have to have Lechem Mishneh. If you have a fourth meal on Shabbat, you have to have Lechem Mishneh. Every meal that you have on Shabbat has got to have Lechem Mishneh associated with it. Again, this might relate to exactly the difference in why we eat Lechem Mishneh. If it's Zecher Leman, then it would make sense that Suda Shlishit doesn't require Lechem Mishneh. The Zecher Leman would have been you were dropping a loaf each meal, and by the time you get to Suda Shlishit, you don't have an extra loaf. On the other hand, if it's a din in Kfelut HaShabbat, doubling everything on Shabbat, alright, the same din should apply by Suda Shlishit as well as to the fourth meal, fifth meal that you have on Shabbat. You always have to have Lechem Mishneh. There is a Zohar, by the way, that says that you have to have 12 loaves. You have to have 12 loaves on Shabbat, which is very difficult, because even if you think you need Lechem Mishneh for each of the meals, that would only get you up to 6 loaves of bread. So where does the Zohar come up for 12 loaves? So those that want to suggest that the Zohar, together with the Rashba, would end up with you with 12 loaves. Because the Rashba says that when you're Botzei, you have to be Botzei on both loaves. You have to break them both. So that means what ends up happening in each meal is that you break the loaves in half. So you have 6, but it's really 6 times 2, because each loaf now is being broken into 2 halves. And the 2 halves are what are Zecher Leman. That's what creates the Lechem Mishneh. So therefore, on Friday night, you have 2 loaves, you cut them in half, right? Now you've ended up with 4. Shabbat morning, you have 2 loaves, you cut them in half, you have another 4. Suda Shlishit, you cut them in half, you have 4, you get 12. So someone explained the Zohar based on that Rashba. All right, that's just a little Torah around Lechem Mishneh, because we touched on it broadly over here. If you break off a piece that's large enough for the entire meal, you look like you're a glutton. What type of piece of bread is this person taking? Take in measured portions. What's this thing of taking out a whole big piece? Since you don't do this every day, it looks like you're doing it the Kavod HaShabbat. It's like you're being mechavev Suda Shabbat, not something that this person's a gluttonous eater. He doesn't eat this every day. He doesn't break his bread this way every year. Generally, he does it in a measured manner. On Shabbat, he takes a generous portion. He breaks off a generous portion of the bread. Now, according to the Rashba, it would be the same thing. The Rashba says you have to cut through both loaves. On a weekday, he doesn't cut through both loaves. Over here, when he cuts through both loaves and takes huge portions, that's okay. Again, that's unique to the Shabbat. If it happened to be that their house was where they placed the Eruv that Shabbat, or someone else brought them over the loaf of the bread of the Eruv, you need a loaf of bread to join the people for the Eruv, they used to make their meal on that Eruv. If you did one mitzvah in it, let's do another mitzvah with it. Now this does enter into the problem we call Enosim mitzvot chavilot chavilot. Now they do mitzvot in bundles. So there the Gemara says this in the Gemara Pesachim, we'll get to this later on in Seder Moed, do 2 mitzvot with a single item. That's only true when the 2 mitzvot that you're doing look like you're bundling or putting them together, because you're going to save something. You're going to save by bundling them together. You're going to save on money, you're going to save in something because you do it together. Over here, the putting the mitzvot together is not a bundling of sorts. It's just a way of expression of, well, we've done a mitzvah with it. The Eruv has to be eaten anyway. If you eat it anyway, let's may as well eat it for a mitzvah. The same way when we take the lulav, and we save the lulav to burn the chametz with it. That's not called mitzvot chavilot chavilot, because you have to dispose of the lulav anyway. So you may as well dispose of it in a way that creates a mitzvah from it. So that's not called mitzvot chavilot chavilot, that's the same over here. Alright, we'll stop over here, because the next thing gets into shalosh suudot for Shabbat, which is another great sugya. We'll do that tomorrow.